What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Stacking Slabs. This is your hobby content alternative, and this is Auction Talk. We are back, and we have more to talk about. Of course, I'm with my man, Nick, at The Wharf Sports Cards, and we're just going to go. That's what we do. We do the format. We got a lot of topics. We talk about a lot of players that maybe get us nostalgic in a way, and topics that I think are cool. We dig into some fun collector-driven topics, and we cover some cards. If you are looking for a way to sell your cards, hit up my man Nick at The Wharf Sports Cards. Use promo code STACKING50 for $50 off your first consignment with Nick. The link is in the show notes. If you're enjoying these conversations, give us feedback. We enjoy that, and that is what is helping fuel these. We go Broadway. We always do. Sit back, relax, enjoy the conversation. Okay, as we record this, this is my bad because I did not do a good job of planning, but we've got the eclipse, like literally is going to happen as we're recording this. And it led me to this opening question that I did not put on the format doc. So, Nick, you're going to have to like think fast about this. But I'm curious, as we're talking about what's up in the sky, space, you know, the sun, moon, stars. I'm curious, like, if you think about that theme of like outer space or the sun or the moon or anything of that, like, what is your favorite up in the air themed sports card set of all time? What comes first to your mind when I talk about that?
It's weird. I've never thought of this. And the first card that came to my mind is the Stardate 2000. I think of the Peyton. I think of the Kobe, the Randy Moss. Like the Kobe, probably the Kobe was the first one that came to my mind. It's just, you know, like the planet in the background, the stars, all that kind of stuff. And just the ride that specific card took. I remember that card going nuclear for a while. And came way back down. But yeah, that's the first one that popped in my head. What about you?
I'll answer your question, but wasn't that like the Kobe Bryant card that just went parabolic and no one had any idea why when it had multiple copies?
Yeah. Like it wasn't a low pop PSA 10, like not a scarce card, like sold pretty frequently. And I mean, it had to be being manipulated. Like that's kind of what everybody just kind of assumed after the fact. Nobody was surprised when it tanked after that peak.
So I've thought about this, and maybe like stories like this make me feel like this should be a project that we focus in on, but there is something to be said about, and I feel like if you follow some of the, like my series of episodes over the course of a period of time, I'm sure nuggets could be pulled out, but I would really like to see like a documentary at some point of like of everything that happened during COVID sports cards. And I feel like we'd all look at it and it'd be a wide range of emotions from happiness to sadness to just anger. Is that something you would watch if it was available?
Oh my gosh. I don't really like to watch sports card. Like I've never watched Golden's show.
No,
like, I don't.
No
like
thanks.
Because I feel like it doesn't actually like reflect what I'm doing in this space or what I care about. But that I would watch. I would totally watch that. There'd be so much nostalgia and so, like you said, so many emotions and just the trip down memory lane. Like that was, it was just such a significant moment in this hobby and we're always going to remember it. So yeah, hopefully somebody was getting stuff together or is trying to put something together. I feel like that's gold right there.
If you're a filmmaker out there and you want to start this project and need some backing content, I'm sure I talked about a lot of these topics. So let's reach out to me at Stacking Slabs. Let's get this party started. But to answer your question, I don't know if this makes me just kind of like an ultra modern simp or whatever, but I just think about the Galactic. And maybe it's, there was an article in the Basketball Card Fanatic magazine, like first few editions of that, that there was an article about the Galactic Parallel and just like, space and time, and it hit all those elements. And you want to talk about like, I'm sorry if you wrote this. I know I follow you on Instagram, but I can't remember exactly who wrote this article. But like that, we talk about things that like influence you and like reading that and then investigating the content itself, like, made me a really big fan of that parallel. And I've talked about Galactics on here a few times, but yeah, I'd probably shout out Galactics out of Revolution. I'm a fan of that parallel, and it kind of represents outer space and what's happening in areas that we don't frequent often.
That's a good one, man. I like that one. And then just others that come to mind, like Planet Metal, just Metal Universe in general. Like, a lot of the PMGs have space themes. Now that you asked that question and I'm thinking about it, there's actually like a decent amount of kind of space related card designs out there.
You know what's really weird? And I promise everyone will get into this, but this is happening right now. So there's like Purdue is playing tonight, but Purdue also has this NASA astronauts angle to the university as well, based on the sciences. And I just like sat, I was like, that's kind of interesting that you've got Purdue playing in the national championship tonight, and you've got such a monumental world event happening that their professors and astronauts have come from that university. And I don't know if that's a, when this goes live, people are going to listen to it and be like, Purdue got smashed by 20 and it doesn't matter. But maybe if Purdue does win, it is just something outside of their control willing them to a victory tonight.
Well, when I scroll on IG, I'm convinced that all sports are rigged. So Purdue is not here by chance. It's all planned. But yeah, that's I mean, now that we're talking about the national championship game in Purdue, like you said, that happens tonight. We're recording on Monday. So I know you have been anti-Purdue this whole tournament, and here they are in the final game. So I think I have to pick Purdue to win it now. I've been UConn, but
I can't. I've been so – they have earned my respect in more ways than one, and I will go out on a limb, and I know UConn is damn good and probably the better team, but I'll pick Purdue tonight too. For you Purdue faithful out there, it's just been forever. I think Matt Painter is a great coach. Zach Edey, Braden Smith, like, I have watched a lot of Purdue basketball this year, not because I'm a fan, but just I watch a lot of basketball, and they're really, really good. So I know a lot of Purdue people, and they're passionate. So I'm hoping for them that they can get this moment. I know they're all fired up tonight.
So we both pick Purdue. So if you guys are betting, definitely bet on UConn.
Bet on UConn. Oh. So, all right, we're going to get into it. This is Auction Talk. What I want to start with, and I was digging in, I feel like every so often we've been doing enough of these that we should have this, like, how are cards really doing chat? And I don't know how long this is, but obviously I look at Card Ladder a lot, and I was looking at their CL 50 and was just looking at like what has happened. And it looks like over the last year in the CL 50, it is down 9%. Out of the last 2 years, the CL 50 is down 25%. And if you don't know what the CL 50 is, it's like hand picked 50 cards that represent, probably the most iconic cards in the hobby in a way. And the thought is that you group all of these together in an index, and you can just, it'll give you a picture about the performance of the hobby as a whole. Well, the last month I was looking at it, and it's actually swinging in the other direction, where we're up 3.59%. I think that is a good sign after maybe a lot of our cards have been just beaten to the ground over the course of the last couple of years. Is that something or is that nothing, the fact that the CL 50 over the last month is up about 3.5%?
It's fun, man, to try to figure out where we are, like how cards are doing, like you said. I feel like it's such a hard question to answer because there's so many different ways you can interpret the data, and there's so many layers of the data. Like you mentioned the last month being up, you know, 4% or whatever it was, and being down whatever percent the last year and 2 years ago. But I think, like, I wanted to look at it closer. That question really got me. So I looked at it closer, and I broke it down by quarter, like every year, to see like how was quarter one last year doing versus quarter two this year. And then like how are all quarter ones looking the last 5 years, right? And I found some stuff that kind of stood out to me. I went back to 2018. Like, I could have gone back further, but I felt like I wanted to get a couple years pre-COVID and then, you know, every year since COVID, just to get kind of a better overall picture. But it was interesting, man. Quarter one, which if you're not familiar with the quarters, would be January through March. Every year since 2018 has been positive. And the CL50 has been positive every single year. I thought that was really interesting. It's almost always like I made a little spreadsheet. Let me see. So it was between 1 and 5% on all of those years, 1 and 5% growth, except for 2021, where it was up 29%, which is super interesting. I mean, that was kind of peak, around peak COVID time. Like COVID really started in like the COVID card boom was really like maybe the summer of 2020 or like late spring 2020. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. And then the other interesting part was every quarter two has been negative for the last 4 years, 21, 22, 23. And then I guess we're in Q2. So for the last 3 years. So if I was betting, I would say Q2 of this year is going to be down slightly. And then I looked at the trend and it's almost every other quarter is the opposite. It's like Q1 is usually positive. Q2 is usually negative. Q3 is usually positive. And then Q4 is usually negative. And if you think about those seasons of cards and seasons of sports, it makes sense. Like the last 3 months of the year, I think everybody knows are kind of down because people are getting into the holiday season, Thanksgiving, Christmas, spending a lot of money, doing a lot of traveling. We're kind of into sports by then. Like we're in the meat of the football season. So there's not as much excitement there. Basketball has already gotten going and is a long season. So the excitement is kind of, you know, at a lower point then. Q3 going up kind of makes sense because the Nationals in there. I mean, it does also include June, which is usually a down month, but July is national. And then August is kind of going into football season, which is always big. So like, I could go on with this forever and just dissect each little nuance of it. But I think the indexes are super informative for these reasons and how you can pick them apart and kind of learn from them.
That's interesting. Look, that's something that I didn't consider. I want to ask a question specifically about the national. Do you think the card market as a whole is at its strongest during that like month buildup to the national? I think it's interesting because a lot of the deals get done in person and don't get tracked. But is it the fact that there's so many people that are maybe getting rid of cards to get cash so they can then go take it to the national? Or is it other dynamics that you think make that period of time really strong for cards?
So what's interesting is, so when you're talking about Q3, like
yep.
Q3 being positive most years. So you're talking about June, July, or you're talking about July, August, September, I guess it would be Q3. So June is interesting because it's a very quiet month on the consignment side. People are holding stuff for the national typically. When it gets that close and they haven't sold stuff, they usually want to keep it for the national and or see what people are doing after the national. Like activity is kind of pretty slow in June. And then it's summer. Summer starts, kids are out of school. Like a lot of us have kids and we're busy with other stuff. So it's kind of like what leads up to the national too is kind of a quiet month. And then the national, there's so much exposure, especially with how social media has blown up and everybody sees, you know, even if you're not at the national, like you know what's going on at the national just by getting on Instagram and Twitter and all that, and YouTube and all that good stuff. And then the timing of what happens right after national is kind of the lead up to football season, which I kind of start my sports card calendar in like September 1. Like that's the beginning of the year because it's football season is about to start. Then we're getting into basketball. Then you get into baseball. Like everything really starts then. World Series is in there. So the timing of that quarter, it makes sense. The national building up to the start of really the sports card calendar season, in my opinion. And then the timing of that stuff, that's when stuff sells the most, right? The preseason and beginning of the season is always the peak for actual like individual sports seasons as well.
And that is, before we kind of move on to the next, that is like without fail year over year from on the consignment side, just based on volume. It's we get the most cards during this period because of the kind of seasons and things that are getting ready to kick off. That's happened every year you've worked in consignment?
100%. It's like August through like October for sure. Sometimes it can trickle into November. It's like always the biggest number of cards. You know, values can be different, but as far as like the most demand for consignment in my 4 years has always been that August through October, maybe early November season.
Okay, that's interesting. And these are just data points that I think are helpful, certainly to me and hopefully to you as you're all thinking about kind of buying and selling your cards. Speaking of which, we're recording this later than normal and probably had more time to think through and look at the performance of cards in the weekly auction. I know I had some cards in that auction last night. What do you want to report on? How did your cards do?
Yeah, so we sold 69 cards in this last weekly auction. They did $49,466.40. So we've been floating around that, you know, pretty much averaging right around 75 cards the last few weeks, which is solid. It's definitely an uptick from when we kind of started cranking this like in January or so. So just a recap of the five cards we talked about. The Griffey San Bernardino PSA 10 did $810, which is right around the last sale. The Mariano Rivera Legacy PSA 9 did $222. That exact copy sold for $180 5 months ago. So a little bit of an uptick there. The 04 Magic and Bird Signature Swatches BGS 9 out of 5 did $3,840, which is down. But we talked about that last episode. It's a card. There's only five copies, but two of the five have sold like six different times in the last 3 years. So when a card that rare sells that many times, even though six in 3 years doesn't sound like that much, it really is. So that's kind of what's hurt the value of that card a little bit. But whoever bought that, I think if you can hold that for a while and no other copies surface, I think you have a good chance of that increasing in value and being a good investment. So, and then the Tatum Black Velocity BGS 9.5 did $1,590, which is up from $1,350 in November, exact same copy. And then we had the 97 Bagwell and Biggio Finest Embossed Refractor PSA 10s, both individual cards, did $156 for the Bagwell, $132 for the Biggio. So right about where I thought they would be. Those are just fun, cheap cards and cool ones to talk about. But
have you gotten into the point just in this iteration of Wharf Sports Cards where you are forecasting and looking at, okay, this is the volume of cards that I would like to be selling on a weekly basis, and here's about what I'm looking for these cards to end up with? Or is it still very much kind of like a work in process?
It's always a work in progress. And in my, like my competitive nature always wants to be better quarter to quarter. But yeah, like it's ideally we're floating around that 100 card mark. And those cards are doing 75,000 range, right? Because then, yeah, that's about $750 a card, but you're going to have a handful of cards that do, you know, 3 to 10,000 and kind of bring up that average. And then most of your cards are going to be, you know, in the 250 to 750 range, most likely. So yeah, you know, the goal is to really be consistently around 100 cards and 75K a week. And I think, honestly, I think post national, I think we'll be there comfortably. I think it'll be kind of, you know, month to month as we get to the national. And then I think after national, it's going to be steady in those numbers.
One of the things that I want to bring up is just other consignment type services, just to get your perspective. And I know last time or one of the times we spoke, you mentioned Fund Your Cards, which follow Empire and Fund Your Cards and that whole launching of that business. I'd love to get some understanding from you, just like the differences between the two and just like, when would someone go work with you? When would someone go work with Fund Your Cards? Like what are the differences kind of between the services?
Yeah. Well, first off, I want to say like, I'm not affiliated with Fund Your Cards at all. And I don't want to speak for them, but from what I do know, just talking from other people that have used their service and all that, is they're more like, they will basically buy cards on your behalf. So whether it's at auction, or like you find a card privately, or they find a card for you privately, or something like that. Like you have a card that you want to buy wherever it is, and you don't have the money for it now, they can buy the card on your behalf and you pay them back with cards of your own that they would then consign. I think they use all kinds of marketplaces like PWCC, Golden. I don't know if they use Alter. I think they use eBay a little bit too. So they kind of spread out where they sell them. And I'm not really sure how they determine where to sell them. I'm not sure how they go about that process. And then they charge you a fee beyond what they funded. So say they fund a $10,000 card. Last I checked, and if any of you have worked with them, correct me if I'm wrong, but last I checked, it was a 10% premium. So if they fund $10,000 card, you would need to pay them back $11,000, whether that's in consignment or, you know, part consignment, part cash. I think they kind of, you know, have some flexibility there. But they don't, as far as I know, they don't just take in consignments. It's all, whenever they're selling cards, it's because they funded a card and somebody is paying them back with their other cards.
Like the diversity of options to sell, I feel like, I don't know if it was when I got back in the hobby, I just had no awareness and didn't really know how to sell cards. But now it just seems like there's more options than ever before. And of course, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm going to tell you, send your cards to Nick at The War Sports Cards. And while you're at it, use the promo code STACKING50 for $50 off your first consignment. How did I do with that, Nick? Did I do okay?
You nailed it, dude.
Okay. But it just seems like there's so many ways to sell cards. And I think maybe too, for people who are trying to get up to speed and don't know, it might be confusing. I guess, like, how do you think that a hobby participant who's, you know, working a regular job and just is looking to do cards when their kids are asleep and want to offload a bunch of the work, how should like that casual hobby participant get up to speed on like all of these various sources of how to sell their cards when they're looking to buy a bigger card? Like, any recommendations or thoughts on that?
Yeah. So it is overwhelming, man. There's so many different options. And I think, you know, so the Fund Your Card option is interesting. Like it gives you options to pay for cards that you might not have the funds liquid for now or anytime like soon. Right. Cause if you win a card on PWCC, you know, Premier, let's say, I think you get 10 days to pay for it. So not everybody can kind of get liquid in 10 days for a bigger purchase. So that kind of buys you some time and lets you figure out what you might want to sell and figure out that process with some more time, but you're going to pay a premium for it. So you have to take that into consideration. But if you can, like I know you kind of like to stay ahead of purchases, right? When you know, like, all right, I'm going to be in buying mode, you usually start sending in some cards for consignment. And I think that's the way to do it, is like kind of take inventory of your inventory every so often and kind of sort through what you want to keep and what you don't want to keep. And honestly, like for me, it's just as simple as just looking at my cards weekly or biweekly and just kind of like what's hitting me right now, right? Like, am I looking at this card and just like, I don't really care about this card. What's the next card? Well, then that's going to go in the pile that I might sell. And I try to do that. I try to do it monthly, honestly, because I like to move through cards and collect new things. Like that's part of the thrill for me is just shuffling my collection, honestly. So I think it's just the process of kind of taking stock of your inventory, your cards. And then to me, it's relationships. Like, you can sell your cards anywhere or with anybody, and you're probably going to get somewhat similar results. But it's like when you are able to build a relationship like you and I have, and like all my other, you know, clients that I consign for, and you can just talk to somebody that you know and you become friends with, and you know exactly how things are going to operate. They operate quickly. They operate smooth. The communication is there. And then the payouts are actually, for us, are very strong, not just reasonable. Then you stick with that person. Like there's no need to really, you know, venture out if you're having a really good experience with your current consignments. So I think it's just finding that person that works for you. And the benefit here with us is you get $50 off your first consignment. So it's like, if you've ever thought about consigning with us or with PWCC and haven't before, like, it's an easy chance to do it, get a discount, get really good fees, get a feel for the process and then decide if, all right, I want to keep using this or maybe not.
Okay, so you like segued perfectly into the next topic as you're talking about this. And what I wanted to talk about is a question that I feel like is a question I'm looking to explore in almost every piece of content that I'm creating. And it's like, what are the ingredients that make something collectible? Not just for the short term, but for the long term. And I would imagine like you going through that process where you're scanning once a month your collection and trying to decide like, all right, these cards over here, these are like, when I think about my collection, are the first cards that come to my mind, they're staying. But these cards over here, they're not really moving me anymore. So there's these other cards that I see up for auction that I'm interested in pursuing. So these cards got to go. I got to make room. Maybe like for you, and it varies, I think, for everybody, but like, what are some of those ingredients that you think about when you're trying to determine not only the personal significance, but the long-term collectability of what you have in your collection?
Yeah, it's tough. And I think you're right. I think it is different for everybody and kind of what their goals are, which is why it makes it such an interesting question, like kind of what makes this collectible to you, right? But I think kind of in general, the ingredients I look at are relevance. So relevance of the card, the set, the player. And then like, if you look at relevance, like just of the category, even like you look at other categories of collectibles, like sports cards are still being produced. They've been produced for, you know, forever, right? Like, I mean, 100 years plus, I don't know. So they've been relevant for a long time. It seems like they're going to be relevant for a long time with, you know, Fanatics investing so much money into continue producing cards, and you're still got Panini and all the other licenses. So like the relevance is there for the category. You look at other categories, like, I don't know, like stamps or something. Like stamps is a good example. Like they might not even have stamps in 10 years. Like stamps might not even exist in 10 years. So that category is probably becoming less relevant. So everything in that category is probably a little bit less relevant and less collectible. So there's relevance in, you know, within the category, and then the category itself, I think, you know, you could talk about relevance as well. But then for me, is it's aesthetics. Like the card has to look sick to me, right? Like it has to be shiny, or, you know, something unique about the design, or like aesthetics are going to be different for everybody, like what they prefer. But if you're going to be holding the card in the collection, like, and it's not aesthetically pleasing to you, then what is the point of holding the card, right? Like it's get those things out and look at them every once in a while and, you know, at least get that joy from it there. So that's definitely an ingredient. The nostalgia level, like, you know, this one's pretty obvious. Like, can that card take you to a certain point of time, whether it's, you know, like a Jerry Rice 90s card, does that take you to 90s Jerry Rice and watching him play? Or maybe that's the card specifically, you know, chasing that card in packs when you were a kid or whatever. Is there a nostalgia there for that card for you personally? And then for other people in the hobby too. I said scarcity. So like scarcity over time. So like a lot of these cards can be rare when they come out, but are they becoming more scarce as time goes? I think that's an indicator of collectability. Like, you know, it can be a card out of 50 that's produced, that comes out in a pack right now. That card out of 50 coming out right now is probably going to sell 100 times in the next 2 years. But how frequent is it selling in 10 years or 15 years? Is it selling a handful of times every couple of years? Well, that card is collectible to somebody somewhere because it's not surfacing anymore. So that's definitely a piece there. I said social components. So like for me, it's fun to collect players or cards that like I can talk to other people about, like that other people get excited like I do about these cards. Like I'm in a Jokic group chat. Like we just talk about Jokic and Jokic cards, and we nerd out about stats and you know how hard it is to find his cards, and you know
Hoge's got to be running that, doesn't he?
Oh, he is. Hoge started it, and dude, it is the. I've been in a lot of group chats and some cool ones. It is the most educational one I've ever been in. It is just super interesting, his market, because it's so limited in the rookie selection, and then there's the whole, you know, argument of where he is historically, and he's just underappreciated because he's a big, and it's just interesting to see people that are like diehard collectors of him and their perspectives. And a lot of those dudes have been collecting him since he was a rookie and his cards were worth nothing. And they're still not selling his cards. Like they're diehard collectors. And I love that group chat. But yeah, like I want to collect those type of players and cards that I can, you know, get in group chats and talk to people about and have fun with. So the social component is huge as well.
Curious on your end, and we can move on to the next, but I feel like one of the things in listening to you talk about that I never really think about, and by the way, as I'm talking about this, it's like literally pitch black outside.
It's dark out, man. Yeah,
it's crazy. Gotham City vibes over here on Talbot Street. I think about this like element of like collecting for yourself, all these things you bought, but then the relevance category, and it's like, we don't want to spend a bunch of money on cards that are going to be irrelevant. Like no matter what, there's some like long-term, we want our cards to hold value. So like, I never thought about it being like us relying so much on the activity of others or sets or parallels that are significant. But it seems like if we're going to put our hard-earned money on something, we want it to be proven out at some level over a long period of time. I don't know that like, can be a slippery slope because you're jumping on cards that maybe were, you know, a third or half the price 2 years ago, and now they continue to elevate because of interest. Like, how do you think about that and just like the actions of others in the collections that you're building?
Yeah, it is a good topic. I think when you start to notice, like, I feel like some of the lower value cards, like, it's crazy because it feels like somebody is collecting every type of card somewhere. Like it feels that way, regardless of value. So it's fun to see like how collecting sort of your less mainstream cards, how people are collecting those at first. Like it usually starts out with like set collectors, team collectors, player collectors, and then kind of builds from there. And as you see more of those cards and maybe more people start to collect their team or more people start to collect their players from those sets, you start to see those cards more, and then more people get excited about those cards, and then more people start buying those cards, and then the values start going up more. So they became more relevant to the overall, you know, participants in the hobby, which is what drives the price of it. But I think, you know, I get excited and buy some of those cards too on the up. You know, I think it just depends on the significance of the card. Like sometimes it's just a matter of learning something new about how significant a card is that you just didn't know was. And then you evaluate that and say like, dude, this is very significant. And I think it's always going to be significant. It's just people are just now learning about it, but I can buy this, whether it's, you know, even if it's gone up 3X and is now $700 versus, you know, $225. And still feel okay about the purchase. So, I mean, the less money you're spending on an individual card, the easier it is to justify. Like, you know, if it goes from 1,000 to 20,000, like, okay, I'm going to be a lot more hesitant now. But if it goes from 200 to 600, like, okay, I can still think about the whys why I might still buy this card.
That makes a lot of sense to me. And I love these kind of topics that might just be in our heads and we get to vocalize here for a little minute. And before we move over, we got to talk sports. So what's on your mind? What's top of mind right now?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it every week, but it's the tournament, man. The women's game was just yesterday. So, you know, South Carolina went undefeated, took down Caitlin Clark in Iowa. You know, it just got me thinking, like, does it matter that Caitlin Clark didn't win a national championship in college? I think the conversation is different for women's versus men's, because when men's guys, like players, are moving on to the NBA, and usually that's where they really get followed by collectors. Clark, I think, like, this might be her peak. Who knows what her WNBA career will be and how much people will follow her. This might be her peak. I'm not saying it is. I don't think it will be. But does no national championship impact her legacy?
It's an interesting question. And what's crazy, like, just to put some, like, how wild this is, but like this past weekend we were in potty training and our youngest daughter is teething. So we've got both those things coming on. My wife and I were just like all weekend, just like hunker down. And we finally were like, we need some people over here. We need to do something to like change this up. So I just sent out a text on the family chat. I'm like, hey, women's national championship, 3 o'clock, like anyone's welcome to come over. Everybody in the family chat said, we'll be there. We'll be there. We'll be there. And you have cousin, my nephews that, you know, they're in middle school. It just, everyone, like when they came into the house, the game was starting and it was like, there wasn't pleasantries and small talk. It was like everyone went to the couch, sat down to watch Caitlin Clark. Some people might have had some action on the game, so there were some interest, but it just, I would never have imagined like this much interest. So I think undeniably, like her legacy is set. I always viewed like the national championship or her winning would be like icing on the cake. But I'll also say this, shout out South Carolina. Jeez, what a squad. I mean, yeah. They down right at the beginning of the game and just owning the paint, owning the boards. That team was one of the best and the most impressive. And I'm not saying Iowa didn't have good players outside of Caitlin Clark, but I just watching Iowa play some of these teams, it just felt like the talent, there was a talent gap in that. I think that talent gap finally caught up to Iowa. They had to play a perfect game the whole time for them to win. That was my take on it.
I agree with all that 100%. And I think when you think about, yeah, I mean, it's tough to compare the guys, but like I compared her kind of college kind of aura and story to Steph Curry when he was in college. Like it just felt similar. And Steph, I think they lost in the Elite Eight. I think Kansas beat them. I think that was that year. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'll have to go back and look at that. But like he didn't win a national championship, but he had the NBA career he had. Like if he didn't have that NBA career, you know, like Jimmer Fredette, there's a good example. Like Jimmer Fredette had the college moment. Like he took the college scene by storm and didn't have the NBA career, but he's still collectible, which is interesting. Not at the same level as Steph, obviously, but he's still collectible. And you have to think it's from what he did in college. So as I talk that through, like, I think I just answered my own question after I said I agreed with you, but yeah, I think Caitlin Clark is, her legacy is cemented and is going to be collectible for forever, for a long time.
Yes. Can't wait to see her in Indianapolis, putting the ball in the hoop. One of the things that I wanted to talk about was just we're in the final week of the NBA season. And last night, as a Pacers fan, the Pacers played the Heat at home and they're right next to each other. It's literally Pacers at 6, Heat at 7. So you've got like the play-in element. You've got the playing Boston element on top of this. And it was like, if the Pacers won, they would have an 80% chance of staying at sixth place. If they lost, it moved to a 20% chance. And like the reason why I'm bringing this up is just because stakes and stakes across the league, literally last night, this one game, and Pacers still have to win. I think they have to go 2-1 the rest of the way to stay at 6. Hopefully they don't screw me, but that's neither here nor there. But like literally by like if they can stay at the 6th spot, you not only avoid Boston in the first round, but then you're on the side of the Bucks and you wouldn't play Boston until the conference championship if you were able to get there. And it's just wild to me as like I'm consuming podcast content and all this stuff. It's just like the stakes of the NBA at the end of the season in every game, I've never seen it where it's at right now. Where like as a fan, especially yesterday, and the Pacers were up by 20 points, and then at the end of the game, they won by 2. It's like, of course, this in Miami, classic Miami, just being Miami Spoelstra coach team. I was just like, man, this is like the wildest NBA I can remember. So I don't know like what this means for when we get into the playoffs, if teams are going to be tired or what, but I don't know this to me. I think I've said it before, but just maybe it's because my team's good finally, but it just feels like this NBA season's special and I'm really, really freaking pumped for the playoffs.
Yeah, man, especially for the Pacers is super interesting because Embiid just came back. So like the Sixers are a different team than where they're going to end up in the standings. So it's like, you know, the Pacers at 6, like right now, if the playoffs started today, they play Orlando. And if I'm betting, I'm betting on the Pacers to get through that series.
That's the one team Orlando has owned us all year. So it's yeah, like,
but that doesn't matter in the playoffs. Like you got Rick Carlisle. Like Carlisle knows what he's doing to win playoff series. And, the talent might, there still might be a gap there. Like Orlando has a lot of talent. Like they're young, yeah, but they have a lot of talent. And like, I think it was the Nuggets and the T-Wolves. Was it last year? Where I think the T-Wolves were like 3-1 against the Nuggets. And then we beat them 4-1 in the first round. Like the team, I mean, we're, the Nuggets are a veteran team. The Pacers are kind of like on the up. So, you know, a little bit different comparison, but I don't think the regular season records matter as much, especially with a guy like Carlisle, who's probably got some things up his sleeve if he sees them in a playoff series that he wasn't going to show during the regular season.
I'm hopeful. I'm just excited that we're in April and there's a brand of basketball that I can tune into every night and actually enjoy it. Maybe I'll hit on this because it's on the sheet. We don't need to go too deep, but I'll just say this. I'm coming off of two nights. My escape was WrestleMania and night two. I mean, in a main event, you got Cody Rhodes taking down my tribal chief, Roman Reigns, finally becoming the new champ. And just the match itself. I mean, you had Cena, you had The Undertaker, The Rock. It was just like, it was one of the most like, it was like WWE Avengers, like all these guys coming out. And it's just funny, like looking at the commentary afterwards, where it's just like, instead of people complaining about stuff, it's just fans excited. And it just seems like in this new era of WWE with Triple H in control, he's giving fans what they want. And I don't know what that means for wrestling cards, but it just feels like they're ushering in a new era of the WWE product, which is super exciting.
Yeah, man. I read the recap like I told you I would. It's honestly like my favorite thing to read. Like it gets me super pumped. Like I feel like I was watching the actual event. And all I was doing was reading the recap today. But like, it's pretty significant, right? Rhodes taking over the title, taking it from Reigns. Like I saw he was the champ for like 13 or 1400 days straight.
Fourth longest reign in the history of the company. Huge.
Yeah, so that's huge. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see where things go from here and then how it affects cards, because as a non-collector, like I've seen a lot of Roman Reigns stuff over the last several years, you know, naturally with what he's the status he's held. So I'm interested to see how long Rhodes holds the title, like how people respond and what cards start to kind of surface, you know, whether it's consignment or social media of Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, I'm pumped about that too. And just full disclaimer, big Roman Reigns collector, and I have Cody Rhodes cards as well. But I think what'll be interesting and what I'm, as a fan collector, and also like I want my cards to hold value, I think all of this we've been waiting for, this iteration of the Roman Reigns character, the plan, whether it's tomorrow or 6 months, a year from now, is to eventually make this guy a babyface, because everybody loves to hate him, and that's going to happen. And so it'll be interesting when Roman Reigns finally becomes a good guy. Does that impact his cards or not? That's the storyline within cards I'm most interested about right now.
Yeah, I love it, man. I'll be following it as a consigner and a hobbyist.
All right, so I'm loving No Recent Comps. I get the newsletter every Saturday. I've commented on that. What's one topic that you want to hit on from your newsletter this week? And by the way, you keep the Ask Me Anything section. That's what I'm enjoying that most out of your newsletter.
Well, I appreciate the feedback. Yeah, I've gotten a lot of that feedback. So people seem to really be liking that segment. And I like it too, honestly. It's my favorite segment since I started it a few weeks ago, just answering people in the online community's questions. So this week's question, we're not going to talk about, but I'll tell you the question. If you want to check out the newsletter, you can go to the website and subscribe there. TheWarpSportsCards.com, or you can go on my Instagram. I have links to everything there. It's free, and it comes to your mailbox every Saturday. We talk about like a podcast I'm listening to, an Instagram account I'm following. We do something I'm reading that's hobby relevant or sports relevant. And then the Ask Me Anything is just a question somebody asked from my online community that I answer in the newsletter. And then we, of course, highlight six cards that are auctioning that week that have no recent comps. So you can check out the answer to the Ask Me Anything. It was, he asked me how I got started in consignment and like three of the biggest cards I've consigned. So I answered it there in this last week's newsletter. But what I want to talk about here was the card we featured, and this is Monday, so this just released Saturday, and I think this card ends Wednesday, I believe. So by the time this airs, this card would have ended on auction, and it is the 2005 Brian Westbrook Finest Superfractor 1/1. I think it's a PSA 8, I believe, which doesn't matter too much. It's a PSA 8. But for those of you that don't know, this is the first football Superfractor 1/1. So it's obviously significant for that reason. I thought it was super interesting, and I talked about it in the newsletter, comparing like sales of guys in this set, their Superfractor, the 2005 Football Finest Superfractor, versus the 2004 Topps Chrome Basketball Superfractor, which was the first Superfractor in basketball. And some eye-popping numbers, man. So this Brian Westbrook sold, I think, a year ago for like $750. All right, so very reasonable price, very affordable. Like most people could buy that card regardless of what they're collecting. Brian Westbrook is, he had a pretty significant career. He, like most people would know Brian Westbrook, he's one of only 20 NFL players to compile over 2,100 total yards from scrimmage in a season. So only 20 players have done that, and he is one of them. He only played 9 years. He had some injuries, kind of a shorter career. And he only played more than 12 games in 3 of those 9 seasons, and he still had over 10,000 yards from scrimmage. So pretty good career, like not you know, one of the best to ever do it, but he had a good career. So I looked at some of these 2004 Topps Chrome Basketball Superfractor sales, and they were insane to me. So a Keith Van Horn PSA 9 sold for $3,000 in September. Keith Van Horn had a decent career. Like I'm not, you know, that one wasn't too insane to me, even though it was like a 5X what the Brian Westbrook does. But these other two were interesting. I'm going to pronounce this guy's name wrong because I've never heard of him. Nenad, N-E-N-A-D, Kristic, C-R-S-T-I-C. I have no idea who this is. He had a raw 2004 Topps Chrome Superfractor sell for $1,000. Jackson Vroman, never heard of him, had his 2004 Topps Chrome Superfractor sold for $1,275. So I just think it's super interesting. I will beat this drum until it's dead. The comparison to similar basketball cards to similar football cards, I think these are similar. First Superfractors, whether it's Finest versus Topps Chrome, I mean, you could argue that, but like this is the first Superfractor for the sport. Like, I don't think there's any reason for them not to sell for similar numbers for similar type of players. And to me, it all comes down to there's just more set collectors in basketball than there is in football, I think, because otherwise you can't explain it. What are your thoughts just hearing those names and those numbers?
It's mind-blowing, and I think the gap still exists in a big way, and you don't realize it until you hear something like that. I also want to say, like, shout out. I wish the name came to me right away, but someone in my group talked about, we mentioned Craig Smith, and someone was like, Craig Smith. Yeah, you saw, did you see that?
I did see that. Yeah, he gave us some info. He played for the T-Wolves, right? Is that what he was saying?
Yeah, he played for the T-Wolves. So I think, yeah, I think what you said is spot on, where it's just the level of set collectors, it's just not there. Or maybe just Superfractor collectors specifically isn't quite there. I think about just the Eagles. I think about Westbrook as a fan favorite, and that blows my mind that there's not more people that are after a card like that. So, it's two different ball games, I think. And, you know, I hate to say this because it always just seems like a narrative, but I think it's true too. It's just like the overseas element. It just seems like whenever you want to compare basketball and football, that's something that you need to bring up in the discussion.
For sure. It definitely is. But I also think that's why I see opportunity in football, because it's like football's on the rise, you know, outside of cars. Like football is on the a better trajectory than any other sport. It has been for a few years now. So it makes sense it would trickle over into cards and, you know, excitement about football cards. So I think if you're looking for significant cards to collect, like regardless of who you collect and what players you collect, like chasing the 05 Finest Superfractors is a great place to land, especially when you can get a Brian Westbrook for $750. You know, if you were doing this in basketball, you'd have to have $100,000 just sitting there to complete half the set of guys you never heard of. So
shout out 05, 06 finest, just awesome sets in general. Yes. Super Fractor not. What is there a card that sold last week that we would consider no recent comps? If so, what was it?
Yeah, so we had my man, White Chocolate Jason Williams, okay. 1998, okay. Topps Chrome Refractor. This was his rookie PSA 10. Sold for $2,000, $2,010 on PWCC Sunday, which was last night here. It last sold for $1,581.56 in May of 2023. So a little bit less than a year ago, up about $420 or $430. But that was a fun one to feature in the newsletter. Not many opportunities to feature a cool white chocolate card in the newsletter.
No, he was, you talk about just players that are burned in the hearts and minds of people our age, and he certainly is one of them. Did he play high school basketball with Randy Moss?
Yes, and football. I think he was the quarterback. I think I've heard Jason Williams say, ask Randy who the best quarterback he's ever played with is, because apparently he says Jason Williams.
Can you imagine being in that algebra class with White Chocolate and Randy Moss?
Oh man, it was in West Virginia too, which is so like country. It's like, you know, like you said, math specifically. I just don't think of math and like country West Virginia in the same sentence. You know, country Illinois too. I'm from Illinois. You could say the same thing about country Illinois. It's just interesting. Randy Moss was a stud at basketball too, so that. Those have to be two of the best athletes to play together at the high school level, I would think.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. All right. Let's jump into some of the cards that are on our mind, pulling up, sharing my screen here as I talk through it. Window. All right. You said it, but man, why not start, go back around the horn? It's funny doing this show. Sometimes you don't know what's going to happen. And sometimes in an episode, you bring up Keith Van Horn's name twice. Dude, something about the draft class with Keith Van Horn, like, dude, he's like one of those 90s players that, like, I don't know if it's that era when he was drafted, but there's more Keith Van Horn content in 2024 and cards and discussion than there probably should be. But there's something nostalgic about him, and the reason the card that I selected was the 97 Metal Universe Precious Metal Gems Keith Van Horn PMG Green out of 10 and a PSA 6.5 holder on PWC Weekly. Or no, this is Premier. This is the Premier. Yes, excuse me. We're adding Premier this week. It ends in 10 days. But man, I just like, I wanted to put this card just because I was like, I wasn't expecting to talk about Keith Van Horn twice, but he was a fine player in the NBA, had a decent career. But like a Keith Van Horn is in the Premier auction, and it just goes to show you like how important significant sets are to the hobby. This could be anybody. And likely, since it's a PMG green, it's going to be part of the Premier auction. So that's why I wanted to put this card in this discussion and just like double down on the fact that like more than anything, the sets matter. Is this a surprise to you that a Keith Van Horn is in the Premier, or is it, no, I worked at PWCC. Like this is normal because it's a PMG green.
Yeah. It's a good question. I think, you know, you pretty much start with Premier when you're talking about a PMG green basketball card coming in, and then it's just a matter of how relevant the player is. So I think this is fine in Premier. You know, just a little inside scoop, like a lot of times it's the sellers that are like, I want to sell this in Premier. Like a lot of times, you know, us as sales guys, we want the cards to sell for the most money too. Like we all win when the cards sell for the most money. A lot of us will push weekly on certain type of cards that are kind of borderline Premier, and maybe they'll get lost in Premier, but could be the best card in weekly if they sold in weekly. Like this would probably have been the best card in weekly. So you could have made that argument, like everybody's going to see this in weekly, but I think it'll do fine in Premier. So not really a surprise. But you know, like you're never going to see a a PMG green, like, you know, mid-tier football card in Premier. It would always be weekly. So it's the basketball set collectors, man. But, you know, it's funny, we talked about Caitlin Clark. We talked about Steph Curry at Davidson and Jimmer Fredette and their college legacies. Like, I actually remember Keith Van Horn more for his college career. Mm. And that made me excited about him as an NBA player. But like him, Andre Miller, Michael Doliak at the University of Utah, Rick Majerus was the coach. I think they went to the national championship one year. I don't know if all three of them were on this team at that time or if it was like a year after Van Horn left or something like that. But I remember that college team more than Van Horn's NBA career. But I definitely, like, I thought I was a Van Horn fan when he was in the league. There was something about him. You know, maybe it was because I watched him in college and enjoyed that team. But for a guy that had an average career, he does seem to be pretty memorable.
Rest in peace, Rick Majerus. Bonus points to you for name dropping Michael Doliak on this episode. We are. I've never ceased to be amazed by who comes up. The next card is the 2021. I want to throw a hockey card in here, and they saw this one. 2021 Middle Universe Champions Purple PMG Wayne Gretzky, 1/1, and a PSA 6. It ends in 6 days. I didn't like, it wasn't intentional to have two PMGs back to back, but I don't know. Like, you've got, there's so much debate on these cards, like after the fact, and these PMGs in later years. But I look at a card like this and I'm like, man, it's Wayne Gretzky, the greatest of all time. And it's a 1/1. Like, whether you're a Gretzky collector, a hockey collector, you don't collect a hockey or Gretzky, or maybe you're a GOAT collector. I feel like this is the type of card that will drive some interest. Obviously, I'm not a hockey collector, but I saw this card and I was like, ooh, a 1/1 Gretzky, and it's a PMG. I think this is something that'll be interesting to talk about. So I don't know, with these types of cards that aren't like, you know, playing days cards, but are of in a brand that people recognize and is a 1/1 of an all-time great player, like, how do you feel about these types of situations and these cards?
Yeah, it depends on the player and, you know, kind of where it is relative to their career and like what, you know, like, did they have PMGs before, if we're talking about PMG specifically. This one's interesting because I think this is the only year they had a 1/1 PMG. Gretzky's in the 2012, I think like 12, 13, and 14 Fleer Retro PMGs, I think he has. But I don't think they had a 1/1. I think they had a green and a red and maybe another color. I don't even know. It might have only been green and red, maybe like blue. So, you know, I would think those would be more sought after than this, but this is the first 1/1. So that's super interesting. I think this will do a good number. And this design is cool. It's kind of like a fresh take on the original design. So I think it's, you know, it's a cool design. It's interesting that these still grade tough. Like, you see a lot of these and they're like still sixes and sevens. You're like, okay, so do we do this on purpose? Like, did we make them the same way they were made in 97 or 96? But yeah, this would be a fun one to watch. Cool. Probably a good one to add at a reasonable price for a Gretzky 1/1, I would think.
No doubt about it. In my thoughts, exactly as I was looking through it. And this next one, I don't want to be like a Pacers homer to bring up a Pacers player again. But the reason why I brought this up was a talking point. And the card's on eBay. It ends in 6 days. It is the 2022-2023 Flawless Benedict Mathurin Game Ward Gold RPA out of 10. And this product just came out and has a lot of cool, it's got a Bill Russell patch set to it, a lot of different things. And the reason why I bring this up, Mathurin's out for the year, so he's not even playing. But I think about Flawless, and I look at this card, and I look at the numbered patch it looks like, look at his auto on the card, and I just see this, and I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm not a big patch guy. I'm not a big auto guy. But if I wanted a patch and auto of Benedict Mathurin, I would much prefer it out of Flawless than I would National Treasures, based on where the patch comes from, this and that. But that's what I wanted to bring this card up. I wanted to bring this card up to talk about this debate we have in the hobby regarding the prices National Treasure cards get versus kind of Flawless. And to me, I know it's all personal preference, patch or auto aside, I just think Flawless is just such a nice looking set of cards. And maybe that is influenced by some of the football cards I have and the patches. But man, to me, it's a no-brainer. How do you think about Flawless versus NT?
I'm on the same side as you, man. I've always preferred the Flawless design. And the fact that you can get game-worn rookies with NBA products, game-worn patches for rookies, like, to me, it doesn't make sense why that wouldn't be the most sought-after rookie patch auto card. But, you know, legacy matters, and there's a lot of people with some really expensive cards from National Treasures that will never let Flawless be worth more money. So, you know, interesting to follow always, but yeah, I'm on the Flawless side, man, for sure. Like you said, even in football, like when neither are game worn, I still like the Flawless design better personally.
So if you hit up the Instagram reel and you see the card content of people flipping cards, undeniably, one of the subjects that is being used as a vehicle to get cash is the National Treasures RPA. Like, that is consistent across the board. You open up any reel, you're at a card show, someone's trying to flip an NT RPA. Does that have anything to do with this preference? You mentioned the long-term collector, but does the weight of that matter when we're talking about values?
100%. The flippers, the dealers, like with these younger guys especially, like there's really like 4 to 5 cards that they're all like trading around and buying and selling from each other. It's the NT RPA. It's the Prism parallels, the rare parallels. Throwing the Contenders Cracked Ice. They love that card. But yeah, I think that the influencers do influence that 100%. Like if they were all flipping Flawless RPAs and you saw those everywhere and they were promoting that, I think it would hold weight, as sad as it sounds.
The next card up is a card you selected. And this card reminds me of the hobby we were talking about a little bit ago, but I'll let you share and talk about it.
Yeah, so this is the 07 Topps Chrome White Refractor out of 99, Kevin Durant, rookie card. This is a PSA 9. This is in the PWCC Premier. So I picked this for a few reasons. I think, for one, like this card has been on a ride. The 10 specifically, the 9 hasn't, you know, been as volatile. But the PSA 10 of this card peaked at $288,000 in March 21, which is insane. It sold most recently for a little over 20K. So down almost 93%. And that last sale was in October. So like 2.5 years, down 93%, which is insane. This is the PSA 9. Last PSA 9 sold for 9K, I think in the fall as well, maybe in the summer. I think this is an opportunity buy. Like for one, honestly, I would have put this in the weekly auction. I think it would have stood out more. I think it's going to get lost in Premier. And something that people don't take into consideration with Premier versus weekly is you have to be approved to bid in Premier. You don't at weekly, you don't have to jump through as many hoops to bid in weekly. So you're going to get more bidders in weekly and more activity. So I'm not sure why you would put a card like this into Premier. And again, it was the seller of this card probably pushed Premier, not PWCC. I've been in those shoes 100 times, trying to talk the seller into weekly when I think it'll be better, and they just want Premier for whatever reason. So I think there's an opportunity to get this card at a better price because you're going to be going up against less bidders. And then I think Durant, just in general, I think he's at a point in his career where people are just not excited about him because he's bounced around. He hasn't won titles. He's kind of at the end of his career. He's not necessarily the guy on his team, but man, in 5 to 10 years, like I think everybody's going to think about and remember Durant. Like I look at a guy like Tracy McGrady. Like Tracy McGrady has a lot of collectors and a lot of his cards are worth a lot of money, and he bounced around teams. He never won a title, but he was a scorer, and Kevin Durant is a better scorer. He bounced around teams, which is the knock, but he actually won a championship and could maybe win another and is going to be at the top of, you know, all the all-time lists when it comes to points scored. I mean, one of the best, I think he's one of the best players we've ever seen in the NBA. I just think it's a value opportunity. And if you get lucky, he makes a run this playoffs. So
I remember there being a time after one of the Dallas card shows where it was all about Kevin Durant and this card and that era and just the volatility of it all. But it's when I saw this card and I pull it up, I thought about that. But agree, I think what's cool, he's in his Sonics uniform, obviously. Yeah. But what's cool is just that era of – or what's cool is just I think the history will – speak very fondly of Kevin Durant and his cards and collectability. It's just we're in that moment right now where it might be a little challenging. The next one, I've always enjoyed this image on this card, so talk us through it.
Yeah, Durant makes a cameo in this card. This is the 2009 Topps Chrome Kobe. It's the refractor out of 500. It's PSA 9. He's doing like a reverse dunk on Durant, it looks like. So a little Durant cameo. If you look closely enough, you can see Russell Westbrook's head poking out behind Durant there. So it's always cool when you can get other stars in the photo. But this card, you know, we've talked about first, but we haven't talked about last. This is the last year of the 09 Topps Chrome basketball set. So I think there's significance there. I know, you know, there's some collectors out there that like, they love bookends. They love first and last. So I think it's relevant there, but this is also one of only three serial numbered Topps Chrome refractors, like the base refractor. I think, I think I wrote it down here. 05 and 07, the refractor was numbered out of 999, and this 09 was out of 500. So it's the most rare serial numbered base refractor from Topps Chrome basketball. So that's significant there as well. But these have come down quite a bit too. Like this is going to be probably around $1,000, maybe even less. These PSA 9s, I want to say were 3 to 4K at one point. So very cool card. It's significant in a few ways, and pretty affordable too.
All right, moving on to the next one before the last one before we get into the cards consigned at the Worst Sports Cards. And this guy, I mean, the few players are nostalgic in say 90s, like seeing this card and this player specifically. What are we looking at?
Man, there's so much to talk about. I'm going to be quick here though. So this is the 98 Skybox Thunder Super Rave out of 25 Thurman Thomas PSA 8. It's a pop one. There's none higher. So highest graded PSA copy. The Super Rave, like a lot of you guys know the Super Rave. You know, it's a rare out of 25 parallel from the late 90s. This card did $446 in August. I do think this copy will do more than that. Honestly, this is Monday. It just listed last night. It's already at $300. I think this will do like $650. This is the type of card that when it surfaces like now, it almost always does more than it whenever the last sale was, even if it was relatively recent. This card has only sold 6 times publicly since 2013 in any condition. So it rarely sells. Thurman Thomas, like underrated running back, stats galore. Played on some really, really good teams that just didn't win Super Bowls, went to Super Bowls, but didn't win them. But what I think is super interesting about this card is actually the Rave out of 150. All right. So the other parallel, the Rave out of 150, Thurman Thomas, has never sold publicly. The Barry Sanders Rave out of 150, never sold publicly. There's something going on with the 98 Skybox Thunder football Rave out of 150s. For many players on that checklist have never surfaced publicly. Like, I don't even know if they're real or if they ever like got out of packs or were ever actually released, but something's fishy there, man. I talked about this last week in an Instagram post where I asked people like, you know, what's a card that is hard to find, but shouldn't be. And I said that card, the Barry Sanders Rave out of 150, because there's quote unquote 150 copies and I've never seen one. But when I saw this card, I immediately looked to see the history of the Rave Thurman Thomas and couldn't find a sale of it. So super interesting. And I wonder if that makes the Super Rave even more desirable because a collector of this card can't even get the Rave.
The punchline is the hobby makes zero sense sometimes and yes, you just got to go with it.
Yes.
That's awesome. All right. Some cards that are going through you. The first one, pretty good football player, accomplished a lot. It's almost like you can play a game where I can almost maybe guess whose card this is, but we're not going to do that publicly. But yeah. I think I might know whose card this is. But
I don't think you will know this one.
Okay.
I think I bet I know who you think it is. And, okay. And it's not him, okay. But,
we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. This is the 2016 Select Gold Prism out of 10 Tom Brady PSA 10. So this is significant in a lot of ways. So this was the first year that Select Football introduced the tiers. So the concourse, the premier, and the field level. This is the concourse, which what's interesting about this specific set is Brady's 2016 field level is actually in his Michigan uniform. So the field level is usually the most desirable of the three tiers, but I think because that one's in his Michigan uniform, I think this one becomes the most desirable. And it's the first year of the concourse, which I think is significant. The first year that Select introduced the tiers. And it's a really attractive card just aesthetically. So it's one of those cards that I love because you have to dig into the research to even know that his 16 field level was in a Michigan uniform. I don't think most people probably know that. They just don't see it and just assume it's in his pro uniform. This will be about a $3,500, maybe $4,000 card, but I think it's a sneaky, important card long-term, honestly.
I didn't know that about the Michigan. The other interesting fact about 2016 Prism, which I enjoy, is that it is the year coming off the gap year. There was no 2015 Select, so 2016 was the first year back. So super cool card, and there's always something to talk about with Tom Brady cards and learning something new. For sure. We're sticking with Select. Let's talk about this one.
Yes. So this is the 2013 Select Gold Prism out of 10 Kawhi Leonard PSA 10. A lot of interesting things here. So Kawhi's rookie year selection for Panini was in 2012. And 2012 Select was the first year Select. But the only rookie in the base set was Damian Lillard. So Kawhi doesn't even have a 2012 base Select Gold Prism. He has all the rookies had a rookie auto. I think they had a rookie auto patch, and he has both of those. And actually, we have like a bunch of really good Kawhi Select Gold cards auctioning right now. We do have his 2012 Select Gold auto auctioning right now, too. That's a big card. I wanted to talk about maybe a little more affordable card with this one. But check that stuff out. But so this is his first Select Gold Prism, like base parallel. It's a PSA 10. Guess how many times the PSA 10 is sold?
Zero. Yeah, I was going to say never. I've never seen this card.
Yeah, so this is a pop too, but the PSA 10 is never sold publicly. So this will be the first time the PSA 10 is ever sold. Last sale of any copy of this card was a PSA 9 in December of 22. So a year and a half ago for $1,660. Kawhi, super interesting. Again, like maybe he's in the same boat as KD on a lesser scale, but probably in that part of his career where people are less excited about him. He hasn't, you know, done much lately. He's been injured. His team's like not really a threat, but could make a run. I think you could get good value on this if you can hold this long term.
Next card is speaking of Purdue.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the 2003 Finest Gold Extractor Drew Brees. This is out of 175 PSA 10. It should be a pretty affordable card. Last PSA 10 sold for $456 in June of 2022. It's a pop 8, but we've only seen two PSA 10s sell publicly in the last like 3 years. So the PSA 10s of this don't surface often. I mean, if you know football collectors, like football collectors love Finest, especially early Finest. So Breeze has a good following, so this could go for more than I think, but I think it'll do in the 400 to 500 range. So super cool, early Finest card, very affordable.
I always wish these cards were printed less than 175 because I just think they're so cool looking. But regardless, you don't see too many PSA 10s of these cards or just from looking at Manning and Brady and some of the other guys. So really like that card. We got a theme of just pretty good players that we're showing here. What do we got next, Nick?
Yeah. Not sure if you've heard of this guy. This is the 1998 Upper Deck. This is the Michael Jordan game warm-up from the MJ game commemorative set that they released in 98. So this is like a game used warm up, which is always interesting because it makes it more affordable, but you get some game used memorabilia in the card. This is a PSA 8. We're going to call it a patch. is two colored, which on this card is very significant. A lot of these are one color. So it's got a little, it's mostly red and got a little bit of white in there, but the two colors sell for a pretty good premium over the one color. A PSA 8 of this with one color patch sold for $750. I think it was in the fall, not super long ago. It's out of 230, so it is serial number. There's not a ton of copies out there, but a game used MJ card from the 90s that you might be able to get for under $1,000, I think is pretty cool.
This is a card I've never seen before, so always appreciate seeing cards that are brand new to me. And we are rounding this out with, I'll tell you what, I'm looking at this guy. I'm going to let you talk about the card, but I've seen, I feel like, I don't know if it's who I'm following, but I've seen more of the best Gronk cards that I've seen over the last couple of weeks. There must be an account sharing it, but I feel like I've seen some banger Gronks out in the Instagram community recently.
There definitely is. There's, I think there's one guy, I think it's like Checo, C-H-E-C-O.
Yes, yes.
And it's numbers.
It's an insane collection.
I think he posted like a 2016 Black Prism today. Like he has an insane collection. This collector has some really good Gronks too, some rare stuff. Like there's a handful of like really, really big Gronk collectors actually, which is cool because that's all it takes for like a tight end, right? They're not featured in everything. There's just kind of naturally less cards of a tight end. So when you get a handful of guys collecting them, their cards become pretty scarce. And then it's cool when they show those off, you know, on social media. But this is the 2010 playoff contenders rookie ink auto Gronkowski PSA 9. So this is a pop 7. There's only one higher. This is like an insert set in the contenders. So it's not the rookie ticket, but it's still a rookie auto. It's on card. Like he has a really cool, I like his auto. Like it's kind of scratchy, but it's like long in it's long vertically and horizontally because of his name, so it covers a lot of ground, which I don't know, I think it's a cool auto. But a PSA 9 of this sold in January for like $200, $210, but the auto was super faded, so this auto is like really strong. I think it should carry this to, I would say, at least like 350. But I mean, super affordable on card auto of arguably, you know, you could make the argument that he's the best tight end of all time. So I think it's a really cool card.
We cover a lot of ground in these episodes. We did it during the eclipse. It is light again. That was the wildest thing. Most interesting thing is recording a podcast while that was going on, and having a house full of children making a lot of fun noises in the background. I always enjoy these episodes, Nick. A lot going on in the hobby. I'm sure this time next week we'll be back with even more. But until then, appreciate it, man.
Yeah, man, I had a blast. Potential big announcement coming next week, so be on the lookout for that. Brett, I will talk to you about that in the meantime. And if you didn't get to witness the eclipse, get in Brett's Patreon group and watch the video of this podcast, and you will see the eclipse live in Brett's office take place.
I love it. We're such a teaser. I'm excited to learn more about this. But thanks, everyone, for listening. Appreciate all the feedback and talk to you soon. Auction Talk. I literally think this is becoming my favorite time of the week, recording these conversations and sharing them with all of you. I have such a better gauge for what is going on in the hobby by doing these, and I'm having a whole lot of fun. Go check out my man Nick at The War Sports Cards, and we'll be back next week.